Very good. Good morning. Welcome to the September 18th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Added closed session item, conference with real property negotiator, property description, assessor's parcel number 013-181-043, Cambria, California. Parties negotiating, James Beringer. Instructions to negotiator is price, terms, and conditions. And property description, assessor's parcel number 074-144-001, southeast corner of Fern Avenue and Mitchell Drive, Los Osos, California. Parties negotiating is James Shepard. Instructions to negotiator is price, terms, and conditions. Amended items. Item number 18, joint resolution between the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors and the San Luis Obispo City Council. Staff is requesting this item be withdrawn for additional review. And item number 20, employee service awards. Staff is requesting the resolution for Barbara Bliss be replaced to correct the title. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Clerk. I just want to comment quickly on item 18, which is a joint resolution between San Luis Obispo County, the City of San Luis Obispo, and the Community Action Partnership. The Community Action Partnership was scheduling a kickoff of their capital campaign a week from this Thursday, which that resolution promoted, and they are postponing their kickoff as they continue to work with the city and their other partners in addressing some of the issues regarding the development of the new homeless services center in San Luis.
For the next phase of Highway 46, which will go from McMillan Canyon Road out to the rest area, former Congressman Bill Thomas was there, he was instrumental and getting a lot of the funding to get that whole project going. So it was a great gathering of a lot of folks that have been working on this for a number of years, and this will take us out to the rest stop. Hopefully we'll drive that golden spike at some point between Kern County and San Luis County right there at the
Y. Good. Thank you, Supervisor Meacham. Public comment period for items not on the agenda. As I call your name, please come forward and state your name for the record. We'll begin with Eric Greening, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and you still have time to get it right on this seismic testing. You still have time to stand with Morro Bay and the constituents that are affected by this and going to be grievously affected by this, and the sea life. The California Fish and Game Commission will be having a hearing next Monday on this subject, and you have time to get it right. We don't yet know whether they will be opening a remote site in Morro Bay. We would ask your assistance in encouraging them to do that. AGP Video is willing to do that. Otherwise, there will be the ecological footprint of a bunch of us going to Sacramento. Now, AB 1632 does not require this type of testing. It does not specify seismic testing or any particular amplitude. In fact, it mostly mentions literature review. If even to imagine that it calls for that would be to imagine that it is possible to pass a law that requires the violation of other laws. That's not how the body of law works in this country. You can't just pass a law that requires someone to violate the Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery and Conservation and Management Act, various international treaties, and certainly in this case it also violates the California Environmental Quality Act, because both by process and content, the State Lands Commission blew it. On August 20th, their chair arrogantly upbraided public commenters for speaking on the merits of whether this project was worth doing, claiming that that decision had already been made and their minds were made up. He was in grievous error on that point. That decision is the decision on overriding considerations. All they had done at that point was certify the EIR. The EIR quantifies the damage. Overriding considerations is the decision as to whether it was worth doing. He got in the way of the public testifying that and telegraphed that their minds were made up before they had heard the evidence. Then they approved overriding considerations of unbelievable flimsiness. All it was a vague allusion to safety issues, but there was not one physical change that would be mandated by information brought forward in this study. The only thing that is required is paper, some new paper at a huge cost to the ecosystem and to the local economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFatta.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. We're residents of the Prohibition Zone, the Assessment District of Los Osos. Last Tuesday, this Board of Supervisors discovered a major problem with costs for the new women's jail turned in on the consent agenda. Where was there, or is there, any oversight when the county board is approving costs of operations that even the entry is in question? How many costs for the Los Osos sewer project have slipped by this board? Amendments to property agreements, rental or leases for properties, ground leases for staging areas, offices and the remodeling costs for those offices. The purchase of properties that are associated with the sewer project under the listing for disapproval of for dispersal of trench water and recycling or recharging the basin. How much was the final payment for the Bay Ridge disposal site? How many acres is being purchased from Jacamozzi under the eminent domain action? Is it 20? Are very important, but the costs are being laid back on those in the prohibition zone. We are not a bottomless pit. Please review costs more judiciously, since we are those that are in the assessment district paying dearly for all of these costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ben DeFatta, followed by Dr. C. Height.
Good morning, Board. I am Ben DeFatta from Los Osos, where the county's next big project choice is a $200 million sewer project that's overpriced and unaffordable. First, I'd like to say that I attended the Sheriff's Family Day Affair at the Madonna Inn Field last Saturday. I only have the highest regards for the Sheriff's Department from the top down. This huge county department that takes in the whole county has to be an awesome job to run by Sheriff Parkinson and all his people. From helicopters, SWAT team, K-9 unit, Prohibition Department, search and rescue, dive team, mounted posse team, bomb task force, jaws of life, drug enforcement, air and sea explorers, animal services, and many other law enforcement and public safety departments that would take too long to list here. Now to get to the real reason I and others are here week after week. Despite a worldwide crisis going on this week, lives and property are going up in smoke, and with a $16 trillion debt that will cause another credit rating downgrading, and with California's billions of dollars shortfall, and with Sacramento's warning to spend billions of dollars to build a bullet train in who knows where, and your board still wanting to build us a flawed gravity sewer collection project that very few property owners, businesses, and renters in the prohibition zone of Los Osos can afford is irresponsible and nuts. Even when those that reside in the prohibition zone are declared an economically depressed zone, you still continue to force us to pay for this flawed, expensive sewer nightmare or move out. Wow, that takes some nerve to do to your constituents. I think that no matter who the next president is going to be, there will be many funding projects severely cut in all of the agencies in Washington and Sacramento. If you really want to see a sewer project built for Los Osos, it makes sense to build one of the cheaper, simpler, and better sewer collection alternatives that are $50 to $100 million cheaper. The people in Washington know they can build two of these overpriced projects anywhere else in this country, thus making it a large target for the soon-to-be-upcoming chopping block. You have heard it many times in the past 5 years. You have had the so-called shovel-ready project. Stop spending money we don't have and putting us thousands more in deeper debt. You, as a political leaders, have failed us again using a flawed gravity project you know we can't afford. We know you can do better, but your decision not to allow the other cheaper alternatives not to bid, and you're choosing the most expensive flawed gravity project for a poor community, is highly suspicious, especially when none of you won't even ask them why. I'll give you the next 10, 15 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DePata. Dr. C. Hype, followed by Mike Jackson. Dr. Hyde?
Dr. C. Hyde.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike Jackson, followed by Piper Riley.
Good morning. Mike Jackson, Atascadero. I have lived in the county since 1958. I have saw the immense changes. I'm here today to express my contempt for the behavior that emanates from the Board of Supervisors at times. I spoke here a few weeks ago regarding my concern for the new energy standards and audits. I had to leave before the comments by the supervisors were heard, but I was able to listen to some of the board's comments on my way back to work. Words similar to these were spoken by Mr. Hill. Same old demagoguery and rhetoric that we always hear. Remarks that he feels are safe to make, as he knows he will go unchallenged. that day. Definition: demagoguery, impassioned appeals to prejudice and emotions of the populace. I was not appealing to the populace when I spoke. I was speaking directly to you. Rhetoric, the art of speaking or writing effectively, or insincere or pretentious language. The latter evidently is the meaning Mr. Hill wanted to get across. There was nothing insincere or pretentious about what I said that day, or what I'm saying today. For other members of the Board of Supervisors to allow this kind of behavior to continue is shameful. You were elected to represent all the citizens of the county, not just those that you choose to. You were not elected to promote your own agendas. You were not elected to sit up there and talk down to us in a feeble attempt to impress yourself. The county, the state, and the nation are in financial ruin. If you understood, or maybe you do understand, but do not care, you would shelve everything that does not produce jobs or lead to job creation. You would work to take the government off the back of those that produce. Someone has to step up and say, we are in trouble, and what are we going to do to help the people of this great country get back on their feet? Or you can continue down the path you've chosen, a path down an ever-increasing slippery slope, and you know that. Finally, Mr. Hill, you're an embarrassment, and you should resign. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Piper Riley, followed by Mike Brown.
Good morning. I am Piper Riley from Los Osos. 2 weeks ago, at a water board meeting, Supervisor Gibson claimed that Los Osos septics are spilling a million gallons per day of discharge into the bay. Really? We then made a formal records request to show proof of Gibson's assertions. Interestingly, this unsubstantiated notion was brought to Sacramento by this board years and years ago. Really, gentlemen, Los Osos has excrement running down the streets? Show me. I can show you health reports that the most polluted areas are near conventional sewers, and I can show you slow sea reports proving that the Back Bay of Los Osos has the cleanest water in the county, a fact the KIT study confirms, stating that less than 1% of all the pollution in the Back Bay is due to Los Osos septics. The only recent pollution comes from the latest CMC spill. You know, the very same system being forced upon us, a system which will require dewatering for installation with rates so extreme that our entire drinking water supply will be destroyed. This will force the whole town to import water from Nacimiento. Everyone will pay because you messed up. The whole county will pay because you lied. You, our former water purveyor, ignored vital water issues and are trying to cover up your ineptitude, resulting in thousands losing their homes and an entire town losing their drinking water supply. How is this not a major crime? Destruction of precious resources? Destruction of a community? Destruction of lives? This is not supporting the people that you represent. Let's recap. You've created a devastating project, both financially and environmentally, destroying an entire town's water supply based solely upon lies in order to cover up your own critical failures and to line certain pockets. Please note that the current Los Osos debacle forced upon us by AB 2701 is authored by Sam Blakesley, who also wrote the legislation driving this very controversial PG&E seismic testing. As mentioned previously, I have great concerns regarding conflicts of interest with Supervisor Gibson, and I am just as concerned with Mr. Blakesley. He and Gibson, both geologists, seem to have ties to oil. There are USGS maps of the current faults, so why do we need more at this time? Because the proposed PG&E testing may show oil deposits, and decimation of this unique ecosystem would certainly make drilling
preserving the basin intact overall. But there are a lot of impacts that really haven't been looked at on the property side, the financial side, and so forth. And I'm not sure all the options on the water side, although there's quite a bit of material on the planning website. But one of the things is in all the briefs and things on the CoLab suit about the smart growth overlay that you adopted, you say that the issue is not, the overlay is not subject to CEQA because it's not a project, and that as implementing tools are brought forward, projects and plans, that there would then be a CEQA review. But on this water basin ordinance, which is a very potent, broad tool, you've got right in the ordinance that it's a Class 8 exemption from CEQA because it tends to preserve the environment and achieve other procedures. So I think there's a problem there, and there's no real economic analysis of it. And then I think it needs some comparative tables that show what it actually – there's some discussion, but it's a little murky for us about pre-ordinance, what over time would likely to be developed where, and then after the ordinance, what would that be, and then a full understanding of what that means. So, we think it's so potent that it's going to need some further work.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Lindy Owen, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. First, I'd like to briefly speak about the PG&E seismic testing. I do believe we have plenty of information about the safety and validity of relicensing or continuing to operate that plant. This is from Terrian in Los Osos. Woe are we, no more life in our sea, thanks to PG&E. And that is what is ahead. When you consider 290,000 Hiroshima-level blasts going under the ocean in that 500-square-mile area along our coast, there'll be nothing left except greasy flotation of all species, all plant life, and everything. This is insane. So I would ask that you step forward and make your voice known that this is not acceptable to our fishing industry or to any of the creatures that live in our ocean. And then back to the Los Osos, lack of an audit, lack of information about where you're spending our money. This is from item 14, your submittal of fiscal year 2011-12. You scooted in a little two-page thing here about our $200 million sewer. somewhere over $17 million at least has been spent on studies and redesign. In 2009, it was shovel-ready, right, Mr. Gibson? You took it to Washington to try to get some shovel-ready money. You say these comments about where we are now, the mid-town site restoration will percolate. It says that it's completed. Well, it's not completed. They haven't finished the fence up. It's an off-road vehicle area now because there's no fencing that nobody could organize this very well. So, but they are beginning to put the coils of stormwater protection in there because it's going to erode and it's going to go there. It is in the basin. It's going down with gravity to the end, and it will probably dump onto the private property, and then that water will go into Sweet Spring. So brilliant project there. It's not completed as it says it is. The LID drainage improvements, those come from the roads funds, but it looks like the county is taking acting like the project paid for it. Again, you say that there's $20 million under budget right now. Well, now it's down to 17.5. Basically, you're spending more money here and there everywhere. Basically, conflict of interest. This project is going to force us to take Nacimiento water, which Pava Ogren has an excess of and needs to get rid of. You're going to take $20 million in admin fees. That over the $200 million project is all going into the county coffers.
Thank you, Ms.
And
Ellen.
New growth in Los Osos. Thank you.
Julie Tacker, followed by Darren Shetler.
Good morning. On the sand spit, some 6 miles of sand spit, special habitat sand spit. This planning staffer sent a letter asking that the permit be consolidated with the Coastal Commission's permit. That might make sense in some situations, but what it also says in the citation from the Coastal Act is that provided that public participation is not substantially impaired by the review consolidation. That's where you miss the boat. We've talked about boats and what size boats, but we haven't talked about project impacts to the land. We haven't had in-depth discussions about that EIR, about that environmental assessment, that go into the gruesome details of what will be happening to the sea life and the land life related to that project. No hearings for the public to participate in the land, the State Lands Commission. People that are affected locally have been disenfranchised by a big, giant state bureaucracy. Mr. Gibson was on the Planning Commission. He knew that the land activity would have needed a coastal development permit. You could have brought this home. We could have been talking about this here. You still can. I called this marine biologist at the Coastal Commission, and I got confirmation, something that's been eating away at me. These cannon blasts will be audible inside the Morro Bay National Estuary. Nature's incubator will be affected by this project.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Darren Chetler, followed by Alan Martin.
Is it on, Darren? There, it's on. It's coming on.
Mike, at the base of the mic.
At the base of that mic that you have, there's a switch.
No, on the base.
On the
stock. Follow the stock down.
Yeah, that one.
There you go.
Here she comes.
I'm actually here to compliment you on the job that you do representing all the citizens.
Here in San Luis Obispo County, we all appreciate it. I thought that in a few minutes here I could update you on what's happening in our community as opposed to trying to set up a meeting with each one of you in the hopes of saving some time. We had our group had what was I consider to be a terrific meeting yesterday with County Council. It was Whitney McDonald and then also with Bill Robeson going over what was happening in the Edna Valley. I have a map here that kind of shows what's happening currently. Since the Greengate Farms has been purchased, it's been now identified to us that it's split up in three different ownerships, or it's potentially going to be split up in three different ownerships. And my understanding now is that was happening during the escrow period. So now, if you look inside the yellow line, that was what Greengate Farms was originally. And it looks as though the Goodwin Wilsons are going to take on the 135 acres, that Earl Darway is going to take on the other three parcels, and that Hamish Marshall is going to take on a 56-acre parcel. What concerns us is that all these parcels are coming in for pre-applications, and they're coming in for some sort of development approval or plans separately. And we're concerned about the aggregate impact of what this environmental or what the environmental impacts will be. County Council, Ms. McDonald, assured us that she would watch us very closely and be sure that the properties would all go under one auspices so they wouldn't get developed independently and be gone through the process independently so that everything could be aggregated. Our concern is that as we speak, there seems to still be some activity out there that hasn't been permitted. The county's done a very good job of trying to keep track of it. But up to this point, I'll draw just a few little notes here. Right here on this piece, there's a very large pond in this area, and there's a very large swale that was filled in here that was never permitted. Well, actually, that swale is right in here. was a large swale that was put in that was not permitted, and they're going to try to permit it after the fact. There was an arena that started here, and now code enforcement stopped the work. And then after that, they went ahead and brought another 1,500 yards of material in to try and do a second arena over here without any permitting. So we're just very concerned that there's activity going on there. We think that code enforcement is on top of it now. I think they've got a handle on it. We were able to express our concern yesterday, and we just want you to be aware of it and just bear with us through this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shetler. Alan Martin, and that concludes my request to speak on public comment. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, fellow supervisors. Just a brief comment on I think what we see happening in the political scene throughout the country. And I'd like to quote from one of my heroes, Abraham Lincoln, who said, "You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot help the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. You cannot further the brotherhood of man by encouraging class hatred. You cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. You cannot keep out of trouble by taking away a person's initiative and independence. You cannot help people permanently by doing for them what they could and should do for themselves." Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Martin. That concludes my request to speak on general public comment, so I'll close it to public comment and ask the clerk to introduce the next item, please.
Item number 14, submittal of the fiscal year 2011-2012 year-end financial report.
Ms. Brown.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Brown from the Administrative Office, and I'm here to present the year-end fiscal year 2011-12 financial report. And this report actually contains more than just the fiscal situation for the fiscal year. It also includes an update on completed capital and maintenance projects, an update on the county's projects that were funded by the ARRA funds, the federal stimulus, and we included an update on the public safety realignment, which was enacted through AB 109. And then we also included the final year results for departmental performance measures. So in this presentation, what I plan to do, let me get this to move, there we go, is to give you a little background on the challenges we faced when we put the budget together, then speak to how our budget ended the year, focusing mostly on the general fund departments and how the budgeted to actual use of general fund dollars ended the year. And then I'll speak to any significant variances between budgeted and actual use of general fund, and also speak to any notable fiscal or operational issues. And then before I wrap it up, I'm going to hand the mic over to Robert Reyes and Ian Parkinson to speak about the public safety realignment, or AB 109. So looking back as we developed the fiscal year 11-12 budget, this was year four of our seven-year pain plan. It started off as a five-year pain plan and was extended. It was another difficult year, and your board needed to make tough choices to bring our budget back into structural balance. We faced an $11.4 million budget gap, and we used $2.3 million of short-term solutions to close that gap, and we also implemented $9.1 million of ongoing operational expenditures to try and bring that budget back into structural balance. And what this involved was cutting general fund support to the departments, as I outlined in the staff report. And as you can see by this table here, the overall spending levels and revenue receipts ended the year were basically consistent with where we were last year, particularly with the general fund. And despite the difficulties we had in developing the budget, the year-end news is very positive, and we ended the year better than we anticipated. The auditor controller will be following up this presentation with information on the fund balance available, but I did include a little bit here, too. We ended the year with a general fund balance of $31.8 million. A large portion of that, $7.45 million, was a loan repayment for the Los Osos sewer project. And the balance was our standard FBA. As you note, on the third bullet, we ended the year with general fund savings of $6.6 million compared to the budgeted amount, and basically this was achieved by implementing the cost containment measures that your board approved a few years ago, and it shows that this plan was executed well and it really worked. Some of the examples of some of those measures include implementing a hiring chill, directing departments to absorb unanticipated expenditures and revenue shortfalls, and also implementing the labor reform strategies that we are now referring to as the three-part plan. Added to this is an additional $4.8 million in non-departmental revenue that was unanticipated. This is revenue that is not associated with departmental operations. It comes from property tax, sales tax, transient occupancy tax, unitary tax, et cetera. This is primarily due to one-time events. We had almost $1.5 million in additional property tax than what was budgeted. The delinquency rate was lower than it's been in years, and it contributed to this. Also, we saw or realized $1.6 million more in sales and use tax. This is primarily due to the Diablo Canyon outage, the two solar plants that are under construction right now. And then there were some smaller pots of sales tax money that had gone to the statewide pool, and these were discovered by our consultant and brought back to us. The transient occupancy tax was also up about $350,000 compared to budget. And we also received a $500,000 settlement with the contractor for the Nacimiento pipeline. So all but one of the department budgets ended the year with general fund savings. 10 of the departments actually had savings greater than $200,000 at year end. This is a list of the departments that had the largest amount of savings. And I did include a chart in the staff report that identifies all the general fund departments and where they ended the year in terms of budgeted to actual general fund support. The one budget that did not produce any general fund savings and actually exceeded the budgeted amount of general fund was the public defender budget, and I'll go into more detail on that in a minute. Most of the savings in the general fund dollars were in the salary and benefit accounts, and this is a result of implementing the hiring chill, which I mentioned earlier, and also the labor reform measures. For example, we hired 151 new employees in fiscal year 11-12, and those new employees are on the second-tier pension, and human resources did a calculation to determine the annualized cost of that savings, and that would be approximately $100 million. In addition, another part of the three-part plan is to share equally any pension rate increases between the county and employees. And there was a pension rate of 1% that was assumed in the budget. And the county would pay half of that, or about $693,000. That rate increase did not go into effect. It was not implemented, and so we also had those savings. And as you can see by this chart here, I mentioned the hiring chill and vacancies. The vacancy rate as of the end of the fiscal year was about 5%, or equated to 123.5 positions, which is basically the same as where it was the year before. Departments also controlled spending in their services and supplies accounts, And there were some departments that had unanticipated revenue, and one in particular I wanted to point out was the Prop 172 half-cent sales tax, which is dedicated to public safety, which came in almost $2 million more or 10% higher than budgeted. And this really resulted in a positive year-end outcome for the four departments that received this revenue, particularly the Sheriff's Department, which gets about two-thirds of it. So I mentioned the public defender budget. This exceeded budget general fund support by approximately $341,000, or 7% beyond what was budgeted. And the primary reason for this is revenue shortfall. We've been mentioning this to the board throughout the year. The county contracts with public defender firms to provide services, and those prices are fixed. That's the largest part of the budget. And there are other expenditures that the county really doesn't control. For example, when there are court-appointed defense attorneys, primarily because our contract attorneys have a conflict with the case, that's an additional cost, as well as any court-approved expenditures, such as a psych evaluation for a defendant. The county's been collecting revenue for public defender services for quite some time, and in 2009 we actually changed the fee structure. That was in response to an audit that was done of the court operations by the AOC, and they recommended that we change that. This was put into place in 2009 about the time the recession hit, and the revenue has been coming in less over the last few years. It's probably a combination of the new fee structure, the impact of the recession, and there are also fewer cases that are coming through. And staff is going to be studying, has been, and will continue to study this fee structure to try and figure out if changes need to be made in the structure itself or in the collection process to increase revenues. And I should mention, too, that we only charge fees to defendants that have ability to pay. Finally, this budget receives state revenue for defense of crimes that are committed on state property, such as the Atascadero State Hospital or California Men's Colony. And we also receive reimbursement from the state for public defense of mentally ordered defenders that have an annual hearing. And this came under budget almost $206,000, primarily because we overestimated the number of cases that we'd have when putting together the budget. In the third quarter, we also mentioned to your board that Department of Social Services was reporting higher than expected costs for in-home supportive services. We commonly refer to that as IHSS. This budget exceeded costs by $565,000, or about 15%, and that's primarily due to an increase in participant hours compared to the prior year. This, however, did not have any impact on the general fund because there were sufficient savings in other areas of the social services budget to cover those costs. And we also reported to your board that employments were down. By year-end, the employments were down about 4% at the airport, and this was after seeing a 12% increase in the prior year. And while employments and commercial air service are a big contributor to revenue for the airport, this situation did not create any challenges with the budget. The airport was able to close this gap, which was approximately about $2,000. With expenditure savings. There we go. Finally, I mentioned that we included the year-end performance measures for each department, as we've done in prior years. The county's results-based decision-making initiative is the tool we use to identify performance measurements that can link local government activities to the outcomes that the community is seeking. In total, we have 221 performance measures. These are the outcome measures, efficiency measures, and quality measures that departments use to track the results of their operation. Of these, we had 79, or 36%, that were exceeded, 46, or 21%, that were met, and 86, or 39%, that were not met. And then we did not have data available for 10 of the measures. So the majority of the measures were either met or exceeded. There were a large number of measures that were not met, although I should say that in a lot of cases, departments fell just shy of the targeted amount. Various reasons for why a department would not meet their targeted measure. The economic recession has had an impact on the county's resources, and this in turn makes it difficult sometimes for departments to achieve their targets. An example would be the public safety response time, I should say, and then the pavement condition rating on roads. On the flip side, the economy can also impact workload for county departments. This can be seen, for example, in social services, where there's a greater demand on our services because of the economic recession. And that can put pressure on departments to actually achieve their targets. And some departments have actually established legitimate stretch targets. For example, County Fire has a target of zero fire-related deaths, and that's definitely a goal that they want to maintain, even though it's difficult to achieve. And now, before I wrap up my presentation, I wanted to turn this over to Robert Reyes from the Probation Department to give an update on the public safety realignment, and I believe Sheriff Parkinson's also going to speak.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Robert Reyes with the Probation Department. As you know, October of 2011, San Luis Obispo County Public Safety Realignment Plan was implemented. And before I address that, I sort of just recap what AB 109 or Public Safety Realignment was or is. Generally, what the legislature did was to do really three primary things. One was to shift certain felony offenders serving state prison time upon their release to be supervised by the probation department. That population is known as the post-community supervision offenders. Secondly, it designated that after October 1st, 2011, certain felony offenses were designated to be served in the county jail as a term of their imprisonment. And then thirdly, it changed the housing of state parolees who were violated for violating their terms and conditions of parole that could only be housed at the county jail as opposed to returning to state prison. In the first year of our implementation plan, we've had a number of challenges, but also have had a number of opportunities to work closely together with our law enforcement partners, the sheriff's office, district attorney, as well as our social services partners, behavioral health partners, drug and alcohol services, county mental health, Department of Social Services, and others to sort of help implement this plan. We sort of believe that this is really an all-hands-deck approach. It's not just one agency, but all of us trying to work together to come up with the most effective plan and problem-solve as things came along. I'll speak really primarily. The goal of the plan was to address three areas, housing, supervision, and treatment of these populations. In terms of, I'll speak to the housing, that's sort of been where the biggest impact has been in the first year. What the state projected in terms of numbers, we have exceeded that, especially in the area of what they consider to be the N3s, the non-violent, non-serious, non-registered sex offender commitments have been much higher in the first year than was projected. The other big area that we exceeded the projections was in state parole revocations. State parole revocations have been much higher in terms of the jail than were projected by the state. that's presented a lot of challenges. A lot of the things that we're trying to work on along with the sheriff's office and the jail is really how best to assess each of the offenders that are there. How can we reach the most and start to provide treatment and other sort of reentry services so that they're much better prepared when they leave incarceration in terms of that transition back into the community. So a lot of work we still have to do with the sheriff's office. We're working very closely together in trying to achieve some of the goals that we want to in the jail. In terms of the post-community release populations, again, that population that the probation department is now responsible to supervise, the numbers have been a little higher than were projected, but relatively it hasn't been a large change. It's in the ballpark in terms of what we expected to come out under our responsibility. This population has been challenging. There's a portion of them that really have, since coming out, have really refused a lot of the services that have been available to them. We see a significant amount of drug use and property crimes within that population. We are closely monitoring them in the community and continue to do so. On the other hand, there also is a percentage of them that we anticipate around 12% that will be discharged after that first year, meaning that they have not committed any new offenses, nor have they violated their conditions of release. So there is good news on that end that some of them are taking advantage of the services and trying to sort of change their lives around. And then we have the middle group really is the largest group, and those ones, a lot of them struggle not only with their sobriety and living a drug-free life, but, of course, a lot of them lack the employment job skills in that area or have a lot of just sort of family relationship issues that really, I think, act as barriers for them to sort of move on and sort of change their life. So we are working closely with them as well with our partners at Drug and Alcohol Services to sort of address those issues as they come out. One of the things we did initially was to establish a weekly a check-in assessment that so many offenders are directed to come in, and we have County Mental Health, Drug and Alcohol Services, and Probation there, and they'll do their assessments, and then we'll sort of guide them and refer them to the appropriate programs. And we found that's been much more effective than just simply telling them to report down to the local County Mental Health office or the local Drug and Alcohol office, because usually they won't do that on their own. This has been much more effective. In terms of some of the major treatment programs that were in the first year plan, including jail treatment, the day reporting center, and the pretrial services program, those programs have not been implemented to date. And what we're looking to do is modifying the plan. We believe what we could more effectively maximize the revenue that we do have and reach more offenders. There was some concern, especially with the day reporting center, that we were really limiting our ability to reach only a small number of offenders, but tie up a lot of the money that we have available. So we're really working on some other ideas to reach out to more offenders, and which I think is important to do. I want to go back, because I missed it. One of the other biggest impacts at the jail has been medical care. We had some unanticipated expenses because of the medical care in the jail, approximately $140,000 in unanticipated costs. We were able, through savings from some of the programs we had not implemented, we were able to sort of pay that. And so that was, again, one of the big impacts of to the jail and of the increased population that we have housed there. In terms of other treatment programs, we have established a collaborative reentry program, and that's been effective in terms of helping them transition from incarceration back into the community. We have established another cognitive behavioral program in the community with a private provider, and this is a probation-funded program. We are sending our folks there. Again, research shows that if you could change their thinking and behavior, then they're more likely to not recidivate. There's been some challenges with that. I'm working on trying to just increase the number of referrals with probation staff, and I'm positive that we'll be able to do that and be able to reach more offenders. And lastly, we have increased the availability of sober beds in the community through the drug and alcohol services. And we, I think that's been very helpful for many offenders that, that needed that sort of transition, not necessarily have to go back into their communities, but wanted a place where they could really focus on their sobriety and work on their issues and hopefully obtain a job. And so that's been effective for many of them. Overall, like I said, there's been many challenges in the first year. I think what's been most positive from my perspective, and I think also from Chief Salio's perspective, is the close working relationship that the Community Corrections Partnership and all the agencies that I had referred to earlier are working very closely. I think we all believe that our goal here is to do what we can to enhance the safety of the community and the county by working with these offenders and many of the traditional barriers that you may think that go along with a variety of disciplines and areas coming together have not been present, which has been very nice to be a part of. And so I really want to commend that. I also want to commend really the county staff that provide the direct services, from the probation officers, the drug and alcohol specialists, the county mental health staff, the sheriff's correctional officers, district attorneys, victim witness. They all really, they're the ones that really should be taken credited for a lot of the successes we have seen in the first year. So I'm very hopeful as we move to the second year, and I expect that the we will bring a second-year plan for your consideration and approval towards the end of October with some of the changes we feel will be important as we move forward. And I think that's the end of my presentation.
Okay. Mr. Reyes, a quick question.
Sure.
Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Robert, a couple questions, if I could. And as you recall, you were kind enough to take me on a ride along yourself and some of your officers on checking on some of the parolees that had been released. So I wonder, in the time that we've now had the 109 in place here, those who are having to be arrested and incarcerated in the county jail after being arrested, is it mostly drug offenses, meaning that they're using drugs?
Yeah, much of it is drug offenses.
Okay, and we saw that when I was with you as
well. You saw that when you were out there with me, and that continues to be a problem. So that's why we really feel like expanding the availability of substance abuse treatment, not only in the community, but in the jail is very important.
Well, I was going to follow up with that, actually. Are you required? I mean, I know that we don't have a lot. We may not have really any diversion outside of the jail, meaning a detox or any kind of other facility. Are you required under the law to, for any of these parolees, these people have been released to, if they turn up dirty, to incarcerate them in the county jail, or are there other options that might be available that might be more effective and not as impactful on our jail?
I mean, there's other options, and I think one of the challenges with this population is because they have such an extensive criminal history, and some of them do have serious and violent felonies in their background, I think it's really incumbent on the probation officer to make that judgment call when they do come up dirty for a positive drug test, whether they can leave them in the community and find some other alternative way of dealing with the violation, or if they feel that they have to be incarcerated for a short time. The nice thing about the post-release supervision population is that the law does allow for a 10-day, what they call flash incarceration. So, we use that as much as we can, because what it does, it gives the probation officer the ability to set up services to address the drug use prior to this releasing that person back into the community. So,
and has the partnership perhaps been developing any ideas on what other ways you might be able, if in fact, as you state, and we probably would expect to see that continue, the post-release supervision is turning up. The offenders are mostly drug-related. If there are other possible avenues that we might develop rather than just flash incarceration or such, which is probably very expensive on our end and sometimes not the most effective way to treat people who still have addiction problems. I mean, are there some sense, and maybe the sheriff can comment on that as well, but some sense of some other possibilities we might examine that we don't have yet?
No, I'll let the sheriff answer. In terms of the probation department, our option is always to place them on electronic monitoring and as an alternative to bring them into the jail. And again, I think it depends. We have to sort of evaluate, is the behavior a public safety issue or not, and then sort of make our decision based on that.
Right. So. Thank you. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Sheriff Parkinson.
Ian Parkinson, County Sheriff. I just want to kind of sum up something because the impacts on the jail are important, but also the direction that Robert spoke about. I think all 58 sheriffs knew that 109 was going to affect us. We were going to be impacted by the number of people. Certainly, the numbers being above what was estimated is concerning. But the truth is from my perspective, my job is to provide a humane and safe environment in the jail. It's not a luxury location. It's not a five-star. And so as long as we can provide that humane and safe environment, that's our goal. Trying to keep our eye on the ball, what's most important here with 109, what's most important is that we tackle the issue of recidivism. We want to reduce that number. That's the goal. That's the goal that I had. That's the reason I was excited about 109 at all. I didn't want a larger population. I wanted less. And so the way we get at that is, of course, our programming. The nice thing about this process is there's a couple things that have happened locally that I think are very impressive. One is that you've seen a variety of departments that are not only county departments, but nonprofit and others that have come together for this issue. This is a community issue. It's not solved by law enforcement. It's not solved by probation or DSS. It's a community issue. And so what you've seen is a fluid process that's been going on. And that fluid process started off with a direction that we thought we were going to be contracting for services outside of the county. And as Robert Reyes and as Lieutenant Michelle Cole from my department have worked together, they've kept a very open mind, which is extremely important in this process because we have never been here before. We know we want to do better than what the state, and this is not meant as to be offensive to the state. It's a big problem. So I think as we're moving forward, what we're seeing is a lot of change of direction. And every single change that we've made so far, I firmly believe, has been really solid. It's been in the best interest of reducing recidivism. We want programs. We've seen some early signs to success already. I was just approached on Saturday at Sheriff's Day by a lady that was incarcerated for methamphetamine. And she told me how grateful she was for the programs that have already been implemented already and the changes she's made in her life, and that she's already in her second semester at Cuesta as a result of the attention and changes. Those are successes we all want because it's not costing us money and hopefully helping people get back their lives. So I think we're heading in the right direction. We'll deal with the impacts of the jail. I'm not worried about that. Certainly, we want to keep those numbers down the best we can. With the opening of the female modular units, it's really eased our overcrowding in the female jail, which was my number one concern. Gave us more opportunity on the female side. And ultimately, though, back to keeping your eye on the ball, I think that the bottom line is right now we're heading in the right direction. It's a fluid process, and I think what we've landed on most recently on our partners and keeping that transition from custody to back to life outside of jail is a connection that we have to have. And I think between Robert Reyes and Michelle Cole in making that connection and passing off that person that's in custody to the outside and the proper programmings, our partnership with DSS has been, I think, the best part of all this process, and I think we're heading in the right direction.
Okay, thank you, Sheriff. A couple of questions or comments here from my colleagues. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It truly is an extraordinary partnership across a breadth of departments in this county that's come on to tackle this. I mean, this is nothing less than the most extraordinary change in the state-county relationship in the last 20 years. This is beyond huge. And I appreciate both the willingness to engage new thinking and also your focus on the goal, which is this, cutting down the recidivism rate to the extent we can. In terms of questions, Are you getting any sense that our population within the greater scheme of AB 109 is starting to stabilize? We're a year into it now. Are we seeing things become a little more predictable?
I would say yes. I think I look at our numbers, at least the jail numbers, and they seem to be stabilizing. I see it every day. I get a report on the population, and the population numbers have been stabilizing. And it fluctuates a little bit from time to time, and when it starts to go up, I get a little more worried. But it's right now, I think over the last 3 to 5 months, It is certainly stabilized.
I mean, to me, it's somewhat a matter of predictability on our workload side. And then the question is, for you, your other 57 colleagues, and I'd put the same question to Mr. Reyes and the probation officers, what's your confidence in the ongoing funding? You're very polite about talking about the state. It's a topic of great conversation within boards of supervisors as funding going forward for the programs and the purpose of AB 109. What's your sense looking forward?
Well, I mean, I'm like you. I firmly believe that it's our money. I mean, we gave the money. They're giving it back, and they got to continue to give it back if they want us to be successful, because we can't bear this cost ourselves. I know that the governor's been at our meetings, our state sheriff's meetings. We've asked that direct question to the governor. How are you going to protect this money? Certainly, we have a ballot measure coming up. The state sheriffs planned initially to initiate their own ballot measure specifically on the constitutional protections of this money. The governor introduced his bill. Our concern is that there's a lot of other things tied up in that, mm-hmm. and it's probably the same concerns you have. And some of those issues are potentially, I would say controversial. I would say that there's an opposing view on whether or not those should be tied together. They are.
And so,
what we were told directly from the governor is that if it didn't pass, two things were going to happen. One, he would not approve a budget without it while he was in office. Second, the state sheriffs have discussed a plan moving forward. If it fails, what is our next step? Is it the next step us initiating our own measure, or what are our next steps? We're very aware that if it fails, we can't end it here. We have to go after. It has to be protected. We can't take that chance. Mm-hmm. There are no guarantees, but what we've been told by the governor, he's not going to let it go. If it doesn't pass, then we go back at it again in another way. Either, something's
and
initiated.
Your association did take a position on the ballot measure, though.
We did.
And that was?
It's in support of.
Okay. And I would ask the same thing of the probation officer, because I think it's something that, appreciating your focus on the question of recidivism, it's the talk of a lot of boards of supervisors and supervisors when we gather, as to what the most important thing in that ballot measure is. And from my perspective and from most of my colleagues' perspectives, it is the constitutional guarantees. So,
I absolutely agree with you. That's the key. Okay. That's our focus. We have to have that.
Okay. Mr. Reyes, from the Probation Officers Association point of view?
The Chief Probation Officers of California have come out and to endorse Prop 30 and are in support of it. And I agree with Sheriff Parkinson. We need the constitutional guarantee for the funding. It's concerning when you don't have that, because then it puts that funding at risk for, unforeseen economic downturns, partisan politics, or just a change in the governor and that doesn't believe in this, and then the funding's cut off. So clearly we need it to continue to support our efforts here locally.
Okay, thank you. Well, I think it's a topic.
Question for Ian.
Yes.
At our board. So those are my questions and comments for now, Mr.
Okay, thank
Chairman.
You,
thank
Supervisor
you.
Gibson. Chair Parkinson, Supervisor Meacham has a question, I believe.
Ian, thank you. And Robert as well, I did all too, got a chance to go along on a ride-along. That was an eye-opener, going on a ride-along with the probation department and working with the sheriff's department. And my office hours are in the sheriff's substation in Templeton every Friday, so I'm getting to know your officers very well.
I can offer you a sit-along in the jail.
Let's see what we're going to do with your funding. I wish I shared your enthusiasm for the most part for the on the realignment issue, but after reading the Los Angeles Times article this morning, I was a little concerned based upon the federal government's requirement for more releases. I can't help but believe that's going to impact you further and probation further. And it seems as though the safety panel for the state is not in agreement with the governor in terms of the safety aspect of what's being proposed. So how are you anticipating dealing with this?
Well, I agree with you. I would probably say that I looked at it glass half full when this came about, because I felt without realignment, this decision was going to be made to reduce the prison population. And we were either going to get a significant number of people released, or we were going to do business a little differently. And I think with realignment, at least we satisfied that initial number. Now, certainly we're running into other challenges. I don't know the impacts of those yet. We have not really discussed that decision, or not raising that cap came out after our state sheriff's meeting. But it's concerning to me as well. And I agree with you. There's absolutely impacts. When they release inmates, there's going to be impacts on the community. The question is what type of releases, how do they get at it? Because we can't take any more. We know that. So the reality is we're waiting as well, and we're equally concerned, if not more concerned, because not only is it affecting just county now, it's going to be affecting every city within those counties.
And along the same lines, those that would be released, I don't know what kind of ratio would be those that would be required to be on probation, and that too will affect the probation department, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do have a number of inmates incarcerated that are in prison that are still non-violent crimes. It goes back to the earlier question about the number of drug offenses. So we still have a number of those. That doesn't necessarily make us a little more comfortable that they're being released early, but I think there's alternatives. There's other inmates available to go out that are not necessarily going to pose a danger to us. And then we kind of have to wait and see what the release plan is and what their next steps are. And unfortunately, with realignment, it's not as if we took a vote, state sheriffs, and said, we want this. Could you please give it to us? I think we all felt the same way. We were going to get it one way or another. The question is how do we approach it?
Yeah. One other thing that was brought to my attention from Tasker State Hospital. If someone acts up there, they assault somebody, you guys have to take them down here. I don't quite get that. I mean, they're mentally disturbed as it is. Why don't they leave them there and figure out what to do with them there?
You're absolutely correct. I mean, I have a serious issue with that, too. They're in the hospital for a reason, and they commit a crime, even though majority of them are in there, cannot commit a crime because of their mental capacity, and they're sent to us. They're on voluntary medication in our facility. They're on forced medication in cases at Atascadero State. So, of course, they, in most cases, further deteriorate while they're in our custody, and it's a vicious cycle. We get them. They get sent back up to Atascadero State, and they reach the point where they might be competent, and they go back to us again to prepare for a court case. And so we're working on alternatives. We know that there's some really serious issues with that. There's some costs with that as well. I mean,
Exactly. We
do have a section in the jail that is really, it's Atascadero South, and it's not only posing some real challenges for the person in custody, but for our staff, both the mental health staff and our custody deputies having to deal with that, because most of them, they're in for a violent act, not a minor act, and it requires any movement with two deputies.
Well, I know that the numbers seem to have elevated over the last several months, I guess, or a year, of the attacks that's taken place at Atascadero State Hospital. Don't they have a facility there that would accommodate this?
They don't. They don't, unfortunately. Their lockdown facility is county jail, and that's one of the problems. And I think that they should have the ability, and I think in many cases a lot of them feel they should have the ability, but there's some challenges between the lockup versus treatment issue at that level, and unfortunately we're kind of at the bottom of the hill.
Well, I know from a logistics standpoint, it seems like it would relieve a little bit of our financial burden here by having them take care of what they have to take care of there. But
And I think trying to put pressure on them to have to pay more of that bill might push them into having to do or take on more of that responsibility, because in all honesty, to the most part, they belong there, not in county jail.
Exactly. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes. Sheriff, that is an issue that if you could provide us with some guidance on how we might address it through our state representatives or any other way that we may help address that problem, because it just simply doesn't make sense. There needs to be a better solution than what we're currently doing. And if you have some thoughts on that and you want to share that, that would be, very well received. And Mr. Grant wants to comment, I think, along those lines as well.
Yes, I do. Jim Grant, County Administrator. This is something that's been on my radar for about 6 months now, maybe a year, in terms of getting – we get some reimbursement through the state for handling some of the CMC and the Atascadero State mental patients when they go through the court system. And so there is a hit-and-miss type of system we have right now where we do take care of those. Some of them appear in court. We get reimbursed for those court costs. What I'm interested in, based on where the sheriff situation is now in the jail, is that I would like to get the county staff together from the administrative office, council, the sheriff's department, and talk about how we can approach this on an all-inclusive basis where whatever happens in Atascadero stays in Atascadero is really the motto that I've got here.
And I'd like Atascadero to stays hospital.
Whatever. Yeah, the hospital.
Can I attend the meeting remotely then? Yeah. That's what you're suggesting?
So we do want to tackle this, and I believe the best way to do that, one, is to identify all the problems associated with those particular inmates so that we have a full array of what we're dealing with, and then come up with a potential solution and then work with our state representatives to get some legislation that protects us from this type of thing, and either that or reimburses us. I would rather go the step further to say, if it happens in Atascadero, they should provide the infrastructure to deal with those inmates at Atascadero and not bring them down here and impact our jail and our court.
Especially given the realignment, too. And
right.
Sheriff,
so,
wanted to comment on
well,
that.
Well, I absolutely agree with Mr. Grant. And Mr. Grant has reached out on this issue with us, and we have begun the talks. I agree. A better solution is for them to stay there, not to be in county jail. Reimbursement is great, but the truth is they need to be there in that facility. We have discussed this with state sheriffs. Very few counties are affected by this. Mm-hmm. We're one of a handful. There's three main ones, but I think there are a total of five or six. But the truth is we're probably one of the ones, Napa, San Luis, and in L.A. are probably the ones that are most impacted by it. So I think working to a solution, like Mr. Grant said, is ultimately our goal. And we can do it. I can put together something, a presentation, because we have had ongoing talks about this and then certainly followed up after our meeting that Mr. Grant pulls together and do a kind of an update presentation if the board would like.
Yeah, I think it would be very useful. In fact, Mr. Reyes suggested that you would be coming back towards the end of October with the plan for year two, and I just want to look forward to that, and I'm curious to know what you are planning and how you're addressing these issues. But my question to you is, do you currently have the resources that you need to address the incarceration problem that you're having? I know the jail population has increased and may continue to increase, and how are we planning for that? We know that the women's jail, you've addressed the population there. We also have a new addition being planned. That's years away before that actually gets completed. I'm curious if you have a plan B to deal with the population going forward.
Well, unfortunately, we're kind of in an awkward position compared to a couple of our neighboring counties. Both Monterey and Santa Barbara have a federal cap on number of inmates in custody. So their ability to release and control population is much better than mine. Now, it doesn't mean that I want a cap. I don't want to be there, ultimately. But we have a number of restrictions that we have regarding releasing of inmates and controlling population. So most of the time, you obviously control population two ways. One, the number come in, and the number that go out. I don't have a lot of control over the number come in. And in regards to going out, recently it was passed the ability to give a 30-day kick with a cap that it cannot exceed 10% of their committed time. So an inmate gets 300 days, we can kick them out potentially 30 days early. Now, it's case by case, and so what we've done over the last 6-8 months, we've established guidelines of what I'm willing to allow out early based on offense and their behavior. So if their behavior is good and their offense is a offense that is nonviolent, non-sexual in nature, and I don't feel would endanger the public, then we look to those release programs. The other thing that we're really encouraging on these releases is to have a plan. It's inmate planning. What are they doing when they get out? Do they have a job? Are they working for a job? Do they have anything like that? So we're really pushing those people, those inmates that are eligible to get out early, to have a plan, because you know, we don't want to be in the business of just cutting them out as new ones come in. We really start have to get at, you know, let's not have them repeat. So we have the 30-day cap. We have the sheriff's parole. We have home detention available to us. We've increased home detention. We're looking at increasing it further to the best we can. With an inmate that can succeed in the program. It's not as simple as just putting them out on a bracelet. So we have probably about 5 different ways of controlling population, and we're working on every single one of those with in mind that I don't want to jeopardize the public. I rather have an overcrowded situation than take that chance. But an alternative array of different methods in order to get at keeping that population down. And as I was asked earlier, I think it's stabilizing a bit. I think with the opening of the female modular units, it's helped tremendously on, you know, two fronts, both the population-wise and the programming space that we so desperately needed on the female side, and then the ability to actually to perform duties like the male honor farm has for years. So it's a challenge, and we're looking at everything available all the time, and keeping in mind that, okay, we're going to be crowded, but, you know, humane and safe, and that's what we're there to provide. And beyond that, it's a little uncomfortable. We've got some poly kids up here that are uncomfortable with, you know, 3 in a room as well, so we'll live with that.
Thank you, Sheriff, and I particularly appreciate the goal of reducing recidivism. I think ultimately that's the solution, as you keep those folks from coming back, and I appreciate you setting that.
One follow-up.
Supervisor Meacham.
And this follow-up to Supervisor Patterson's request, when you come back in October to talk about statistics or things, do we need to put this on the legislative platform relative to the Tascadero situation?
Yes, that is going to be the goal.
Thank you.
In fact, our legislative advocates will be back in October as well.
That's right.
We have a meeting scheduled with them. Any further questions for Mr. Reyes or Sheriff Parkins? I see none here. We do have some requests to speak on this item, gentlemen. Did you have more to offer to conclude, Ms. Brown, before we
go to public
comments?
I just need a few
comments?
Minutes.
Okay,
to wrap up.
Fine. We'll do that. Thank you, gentlemen.
And while the clerk's pulling up the slideshow again, I just wanted to mention that item 10 on today's consent agenda was for law enforcement medical care. And the department, the health agency did not add any staff in this first year in fiscal year 11-12, and they found that that's just not viable. And there was a lot of pressure on the law enforcement medical care staff, and so you did approve this, and they'll appreciate that.
Okay. Good.
Okay. So just to wrap up, just to summarize the recommendations for your board, receive and file the report and approve cash donations for animal services, parks, library, and social services in the amount of $112,500. Also approve relief of accountability requests that have been submitted by the health agency for both the public health lab and environmental services, totaling $82,749. And to approve a budget adjustment to bring in $29,400 in grant funds to the Veterans Services budget for Veterans Outreach Services.
Okay, that's the total of the staff recommendations. So we can leave that up there, and we will open it to public comment on this item. I do have a few folks wanting to speak to this item, please come forward as I call your name. Mike Brown, followed by Julie Tacker.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. We thought the report was a good document. It was clear. It was professional. And it explained quite a few things. And is well worth studying. We also are very impressed with the commitment of the county to using recurring performance measures. Not many counties do that or do it in a sustained role. Some of the cities do it some more, but we think that it's a good effort, and particularly that you've sustained it during a down economy when the temptation is to cut back on some things. We would hope that as you evolve the system that the board could spend some time actually looking at the performance measures some Tuesday when you have a light agenda. It's a big file on the electronic agenda, because there are 221, but we think that sustaining those, and we know how much all the department heads love to do performance measures, so it's a good thing. In terms of the financials, of course, it's good that people live within their budgets and adjust to revenue problems. Significantly, some of the departmental revenues were off by $11 million, but that was made up by $14 million in savings in various ways, as documented in the report. I think significantly in some of the discussions in the report, where it talks about, on the one hand, the decline in the economy pressuring an increased demand for services, and on the other hand, the decline in the economy contributing to relatively flat revenues. As the report points out, the apparent increase in the property tax is largely due to increase in the collection rate, not a strengthening of the assessments. The sales tax may be due to certain anomalies, one-time payment, and the solar farms. We would hope, and the property transfer tax and the is down, again, a predictor of future assessments and so forth, that when you get to the economic element, that you link some of these facts to that discussion and say, what can we really do to strengthen the basic economics?
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Julie Tackert, followed by Lindy Owen. Ms. Tacker.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and I wanted to concentrate on pages 30, 31, and 32 of your staff report relative to the Los Osos Wastewater Project summary. And the opening paragraph says, construction has begun. I beg to differ. The Midtown restoration appears to have been prioritized due to the need for dewatering at some 7 million gallons a day, a land application of that water. The site is not ready for that, nor is it restored to native habitat. The low-impact development and drainage improvements, that was a $2.2 million budget line item, but that didn't come from the wastewater project, and it's not included in page 31 and 32, and it shouldn't be. So I don't know why it's referenced in here. The collection system, it says contractors have recently mobilized and begun work. I think there's one backhoe and a vacuum truck out there with there's just the mobilization has not taken place. And it talks about a website. The website was last updated in mid-August. The water conservation plan, try as I might to go over and over this budget status report that's attached to your staff report, I cannot find the $5 million set aside for water conservation, and I would appreciate someone point that out to me. The water recycling facility, you know, in 2005, our plant at the Tri-W site was $46 million. You based your collection system budget off of that project, and the collection system in your project has come in at a lesser dollar amount, but you have budgeted about $10 million less on your treatment facility, and I don't know why there's a disparity there. The BioLac treatment was removed from consideration, and a Corolo oxidation ditch is what we're in line for. Coincidentally, Corolo designed and built the designed the CMC and Pismo Beach plants. Those plants were 16 and 18, maybe $20 million on the outset. Ours is budgeted at $34 million. So that's an off-the-shelf oxidation ditch. The on-lot lateral connections, there's no budget for that. That's the property owner's responsibility. You say there's $17.5 million left on the table, and you really shouldn't brag
about that
because
you,
the
Ms.
contractors
Tacker.
Will know, and their bids will come in accordingly.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Lindy Owen, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning, Lindy Owen, Los Osos, Prohibition Zone. Again, it looks like you pretty much wrapped it up in 2.5 pages out of a 50-page report, and we're talking approved budget project. You've got 22.796 and $855,000 already spent. So the details are glaringly missing as far as I can tell. Those of us who want to know where the grant money has gone, how it got applied, and how it got distributed as much of anything are kind of at a loss. I was trying to find where the grant money you say that $18 million in grant funds is and you're actively seeking several more million in additional grants. The question is, where does that money land in here? I don't see the grant money coming in. So, again, that's just it doesn't explain your expenditures of our money on a project that you chose. It says the project to restore the Midtown site to a natural state was completed in the summer of 2012. Excuse me, there's absolutely no completion done. They're just putting the bollards in there right now, and the planting hasn't even started yet. When you go to how much has been spent already, it says that the Midtown restoration, $180,442 has been spent out of the $414,833. So please, that needs to be corrected because it has not been spent and it has not been finished. Again, questions. We're going to have an El Nino. You will find probably by the end of this year that project failed and the water pushed on down and it may be going into the bay or flooding the mobile home park down below. Only because if you go out and walk the area, you can see it. It's logical. You talk about a pain plan. We're having a big pain plan in Los Osos because we're paying for a sewer that we have absolutely no idea where it is. The money that's being spent to educate us and bring us up to par as to what's going to happen and when it's going to happen, it's not being spent. As Ms. Tacker said, the website has not even been updated in, 2.5 months. This is like a project, a stealth project, and not much is being done, and I would really still like to ask for a forensic audit on every expenditure that's come in and every money that has come in and where it has been spent. I think the people of Los Osos deserve that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Al Barrow, and that concludes my request to speak.
Good afternoon. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. My purpose has always been to address the issues of affordable housing. The impact of the sewer, obviously, is not going to help that. I wanted to know in your document here on the budget, how many millions of dollars are you charging us to oversee the project? I thought it was interesting at the Water Board meeting last week that the Water Board said that they were assured by your staff that the contractors had a dewatering plan. I don't know if there's ever been an estimation, as far as I know, about the cost of pumping the water from the underwater trenches so you can install the collection pipes. That's a missing item. The cost of the electrical to pump all that water, we're talking as much as 27 acre feet a day. We're talking as much water as the purveyors in Los Osos use in 10 years. That's a lot of water, a lot of power it takes to move that water up. It's the same thing with farmers. Farmers use more water, more electricity than anybody in the state because they have to pump that water. So this is basically what we're having. We're moving water around. And I just don't think that that cost has been clarified in this document. And I would ask that the county controller look at that and find out what portion of the sewer cost is going to be related to that. And are you getting 10% or 15% of the total cost of the project on top of everything else to oversee the project? And I thought it was very interesting, as far as you're overseeing the project, that the head of the Water Board said, well, we're not worried because the county is going to hold the contractors responsible to have a dewatering plan. But nobody has ever seen a dewatering plan. That's the mystery document. Could we see a dewatering plan, please? Thank you. And I'm sorry I couldn't have made public comment, but my boss was late and I wasn't able to get off the lake in time. So cheers.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. And that concludes my request to speak on this item. So I'll close public comment, bring it back to the board, and ask Ms. Brown if you'd put the staff recommendation slide back up, please, so we can have that in front of us. And we're ready for action from the board. I do want to thank Mr. Reyes and Sheriff Parkinson for the presentation on 109 this morning, and we look forward to your update in a few weeks.
Mr. Chair,
I want to take a moment, if I may, to Ms. Brown pointed out that we had $112,000 in contributions coming from animal services, the libraries, parks, and social services. And certainly we do our job better, as well as we do, because of the participation from the public in these areas, and we greatly appreciate that. Supervisor Meacham?
Well, with that, I would move staff recommendations on the summary of recommendations presented.
Second. Yes, okay. And then we have a second, and Mr. Grant.
Well, I might just, if you don't mind, the motion maker, maybe a recommendation for the recommendations made in the staff report. There are 8 of them. These are kind of combined.
Yes.
It may be for the clerk's purposes if we go with the staff recommendation in the report.
that might be a better thing to do.
Okay, very good. Thank you. It's more detailed there. It
yes.
itemizes the contributions and debt forgiveness and so forth. And Ms. Brown, thank you for a very detailed report. And so with that, Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. And with that, we'll take a short break and reconvene.
You're live.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We will move on with our agenda this morning. Item number 15, would you introduce that item, please, Madam Clerk?
Item number 15, submittal of a resolution approving the 2012-2013 final budget actions.
Thank you. Mr. Seebach.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Jerry Seebach, Auditor Controller. This is an action that your board needs to take every year around this time. In June, our tradition is to have budget hearings, and your board adopts the budget based on the recommendations of the administrative officer at the time. But the one thing that's left hanging is the unknown amount of actual carryover to the fund balance, which flows into the next year. We have our budget, of course, each fiscal year, but around February and March, my staff is working with departments to try to estimate how much money will they actually spend, how much will they actually bring in, and how much will be left over at the end of June and when the books are closed. So it's a target that we're trying to hit. In, as I said, in the spring, really, for June, and we made our estimate, and the administrative officer then uses that amount of fund balance available to put into the proposed budget, which he delivers around the 1st of May. Around early August, we finally get the books all closed, and the final fund balance is known. So that's what we're bringing here for you today is the amount and the disposition of that carryover fund balance available. Now, this year, Ms. Brown already you already saw in the previous item, there was a lot of expenditure savings. There was some revenue, unexpected revenues. Overall, the departments did a very good job of controlling the budget, and so we had estimated fund balance carryover in the neighborhood of 20 something million. It turned out to be more like 30 million. Now that's good news. So part of it, about 3.5 million of it, was the normal what we call sort of the normal error in estimating. And that we have some detail in this report about those various differences and particularly the non-departmental revenue, which is one that we keep a close eye on and that's where most of your discretionary revenue comes from for the county. So that's a real important budget unit. So there was about $3 million over realization in non-departmental revenue. So that's really good. Some of it's an anomaly, or as was stated, like one-time stuff. But then we had another issue, or another item, which is abnormal. The county had lent, the county general fund had lent almost $7.5 million to the Los Osos Sewer Project Fund over a period of years. And when they finally had a loan, it's called doesn't matter what it's called. They did a loan with a bank and borrowed enough money to pay the county general fund back. Now, what we have now is the receipt of those funds, which now becomes available. What happens when we make loans from the general fund to other funds or to other districts or something. We can't spend the cash twice, so we've given them the cash and we get an IOU, but we say, well, okay, we can't spend that cash again, so we take it out of the fund balance that's available for financing. When the loan was repaid, that cash comes back to the general fund, and now it is available for financing whatever the board desires. The administrative officer's recommendations are included in this item, and I support the idea of using one-time funds. I've always recommended one-time funds going for one-time purposes, if at all possible, because you don't get yourself into the trap of having ongoing expenses that aren't going to be covered. So then I think the administrative office wants, will, should speak to their reasoning on the various recommendations for disposition of the fund balance carryover.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Seebach.
Yeah,
Mr. Buckshy, are you?
Sure, I'll speak.
Weigh in at this point.
Give a brief overview. As Mr. Seebach noted, the auditor's office is responsible for doing the estimates and closing the books and calculating fund balance, and the administrative office is responsible then for making a recommendation for your board for how to allocate the additional funds in years in which there are some. You know, I'll be brief. It is outlined in detail, I think, in the staff report. You know, we've really viewed this as two separate issues. What we have is our general FBA, like we do every year, which is about the $3.6 million, and then we have the $7.5 million loan repayment, and it's structured that way intentionally to identify that we really don't have $11 million of what we would call true FBA, or consistently how we've defined FBA anyway. You know, overall, we are recommending some one-time things, and it's really to help allocate funding to areas that we've underfunded in the past few years intentionally as part of the budget balancing strategies. You can see $1.5 million for roads to help with the pavement management, specifically allocated for pavement management. Parks designation, $600,000 there. This is to help with the backlog of major maintenance projects as well as capital projects. It's not for ongoing maintenance such as tree trimming or mowing lawns or maintaining structures. It's really to replace and upgrade facilities as there's a considerable backlog. Fire equipment replacement, again, $250,000 allocated. We've intentionally, the part of the fire department's strategies for balancing its budget the last few years is to reallocate some funding to operations from equipment replacements. We're putting that back. I guess to close this out then, your board during budget hearings had directed that if there was additional FBA to look at funding the additional request from the Visitors Conference Bureau for $50,000 to help fund the economic strategy as it relates to tourism, and then an additional $18,000 from the Economic Vitality Corporation to help subsidize its operations. And it's, again, largely related to the economic strategy. And then lastly, in the category of the $3.6 million of standard FBA, is about $1.2 million to help jumpstart solar on county facilities. We gave a rather comprehensive update on energy and energy programs just a few weeks ago and talked about some projects where we might want to put solar on county buildings. Now, this is not intended for any particular project. Would be set aside as projects come forward, such as the one at the Honor Farm that we had discussed during that meeting, or possibly the juvenile hall or women's jail, which will be designed in order to accommodate solar, and it could be put on solar could be put on at any point. Close it out then on the other side of the sheet, the $7.5 million that's related to the loan repayment. I believe Mr. Seebach explained how that occurred. We do have our pension obligation bonds that were issued back in 2003. And we're recommending about $4 million be set aside to help pay those down. There are some that come due in about 8 or 9 years, and the idea is to set some money aside, pay those down, so that if we have to refinance, we'll be refinancing a lower principal and can then lower our debt service. And then the remaining $3.5 million would be to set aside for capital projects. Nothing certain at this point. It would be a general allocation, the idea being that we have a 5-year capital plan and we would use this funding to help implement those projects.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. Quick question. relative to the recommendations from the county administrator's office. We are currently maintaining a 4% contingency in our general fund, and I think we actually at one point went down to 3% and then raised it back to 4%, but our budget policy is 5%, and I think we've been doing fine at 4%, but I'm just curious why you weren't recommending that we take that back up to 5%, or at which point you anticipate doing that, or if we even do it, because I think the minimum is 3%. We, again, have a budget policy of 5%, and we've been maintaining 4% for the last few years.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and speak to that initially. And yes, we do have a budget policy of 5%. One of the short-term strategies has been to reduce it to 4%. We've never really dipped below 4%. We could have, I think in past we've had discussions at the lowest we would even never, you know, really consider going to 3%, or recommend we consider would be going down to 3%, and we've not gone down that far. The reason this bringing it back up to 5% is not included here is because that contingency is an ongoing part of the budget. It's really part of the operational budget. So if we add it, we'd want to then build it in for next year, which basically add about $4 million to the budget gap. You know, one of the 4% has worked well. One of the reasons the 4% has been adequate is because we've not had any prevailing wage or salary or benefit increases the last few years. The primary use of contingencies in past years has been to help fund any prevailing wages that are granted. So I think, you know, just to outline that a little bit more, and I'll talk to it on October 9th when we do our financial forecast. But I think, you know, just to clarify, we're still in a mode that we're overall cutting. We're in a fortunate position of where we implemented well here this year, and we have more money than we anticipated. But once we do get to an era, if you will, of where we're adding back, the challenge will be to look at how do we add back for programs and services, add back to contingencies, and at some point grant some type of salary or benefit increases to employees. So I think those will be the three areas we'll need to look at. How do we balance that into the future?
Very good. Thank you for that explanation. Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, and I appreciate Supervisor Patterson bringing that up. I was wondering when we might look at the potential of bringing that back to 5%, or at least address the policy. Does that policy need to be changed? I don't know. But at what point, Mr. Buckshy, will we be seeing a little bit more detail in terms of, like, the $600,000 for parks projects? When will we be seeing more detail on these sorts of things?
Well, the idea would be to set this aside in the parks designation for future use. And I know a little while back they outlined an overview of projects that they have on their backlog. If your board would like, we could certainly ask the Parks Department to come back and talk about, revisit their priorities and how this additional funding plays into that.
Well, what I'm looking for is, as we talked about this a couple meetings ago, finishing up some of the projects that we've got out there, and if this money is going to go towards that, I'm all for it. I think that's a good idea to wrap up some of the things that we've had on the books for some time. So I'd just be interested to see what can be completed.
I think, again, we could ask that same question about the $3.5 million for capital projects, right? And we have a long list of those, and it would be nice at some point to have a conversation about what that would be used for. Right now it's just in a designation, and we will have a more detailed conversation sometime in the near future, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, part of our process is to update our five-year capital plan, and your board approved the last plan this past March. We'd bring it back to your board in the early part of next year. You know, we have a lot more projects on the five-year capital plan than we do funding, so the short answer would be is we would use this funding to help fund the projects that are the highest on that prioritized list.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. Mr. Seebach, did you have more to contribute before we...
Well, I just... Maybe one thing...
$11 million is pretty good, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'm trying to ratchet it up here.
Mr. Buckshy didn't highlight another of their recommendations, which is $1.5 million for roads to help in pavement management, and I think that was also an item that some of the board members at least mentioned during budget hearings that they would like to see some, if funds were available, to step that up so that we don't get farther and farther behind on pavement repairs.
And we did see in our September 4 strategic planning session that roads is on a downward trend in terms of maintaining our pavement improvement condition, and we do need to supplement that. So I certainly am supportive of that.
Otherwise, I'm here to answer questions if necessary.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Seebach?
Can we expect the same next year?
I don't think so.
He's going out on a high note.
Yeah, really. I think he was holding us back for the, you know, the encore, so to speak. Okay. Well, enough of that. And thank you, Mr. Buckshy. We do have more to discuss, but I want to open it to public comment. I do have one request to speak on this item. Mr. Brown?
I'm done. I combined them. Thank you.
Okay.
So. He's good.
All right. Good. So I'll close it to public comment and bring it back, and I'll basically raise an issue here, and that is having this opportunity present itself. We have a couple of years ago, and Supervisor Hill took the lead on this, and this effort is still ongoing, and that is actually provide a site for the new Homeless Services Center here in San Luis Obispo County, and that's for combining the emergency shelter, the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, with the day services, the Prado Day Center, combining that into one facility. And that project is underway, but also underway in this county are two very ambitious programs, one in the North County, the El Camino Homeless Organization in Atascadero that serves the entire North County. They are underway with a capital campaign to increase or improve their services, to purchase their facility. And in the South County, we have the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, who are also undertaking a capital campaign to purchase a site and broaden the services to the homeless in the South County. And we have been working very hard the past couple of years to really educate county residents about our homeless situation here in San Luis Obispo and recognize the fact that it's not just a San Luis Obispo problem, it's a countywide problem, and we need to address it comprehensively. The Homeless Services Oversight Committee, which this board established, recognizes the fact that the three regional programs need to be working together to support each other, and since they all are embarking on a very ambitious capital campaign totaling about $12.5 million, I would like to see this county, like we've done for San Luis Obispo and the Homeless Services Center, make an equal commitment to both the El Camino Homeless Organization in the North County and the Five Cities Homeless Coalition in the South County to demonstrate that we recognize that it's a countywide issue and that we are supportive of the efforts countywide to really comprehensively and effectively address that. And I'm just putting that out on the table to take a look at how we might distribute this additional funding in the future, and would ask staff if my colleagues support that idea that when staff comes back to us with more detail that they include that in the discussion. So I'll put that on the table. And Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you identify certainly a very, very important social issue in this county, and I guess as I listen to you describe it, you're really talking about facilities. Is your thoughts there, which would be part of the potential capital improvements that the county might fund?
It could something come like out of them. That, yes. And I know in the South County they are looking for a site, negotiating for a site for the Five Cities homeless services down there, which would be more patterned. I think their intent is to have more like a day services facility. And the El Camino Homeless Organization in the North County, they actually have an opportunity to purchase the site where they are, and their hope is to purchase that site and expand their services. So I think it could very well be reserved in that capital project fund.
And I'm certainly amenable to that consideration. We have the 10-year plan to end homelessness and a number of other things that would point policy directions where we go. Again, leaving it to staff to balance that with other issues that we know have been on the list for a long time.
I think it demonstrates from the service perspective and from the public's perspective that we are addressing the problem countywide comprehensively as it should be.
So I'd like to bring up one other thing for staff's consideration. And before I do, I'd like to make a general comment or observation. I hope that during my time in office I'll be able to see the day when we're adding back to the county budget, as Mr. Buckshy referenced there. I haven't seen that in my nearly 6 years in this position. But when we get to that point, I would observe that we have been as successful as I think we possibly could be, as our financial situation has contracted, in making careful moves in the direction of contraction. And we have spoken of a strategic approach, a very careful one-time versus ongoing approach, a structural elimination of programs where necessary, and shared pain. That's been part of our policy, directive has been that we're going to spread the impacts. I've been thinking about it. I've talked to admin staff about it. I think when we do get to that point of adding back, we need to be every bit as strategic in how we add back to county services, add back to county contingencies, add back to county reserves, and all the other things that have kept this county in a strong position. I offer that and then bring up this for the consideration of this particular fund balance available. One of the places where we have asked and received a tremendous amount is from county employees. And I would like to offer colleagues the thought that staff might consider where some portion of this fund balance available be available to supplement or in somehow go back to county employees who have given so much over the last few years. I'm mindful that this is generally one-time money. I'm mindful that we have ongoing commitments, but to expenses that are a significant part of our budget when we talk about salary and benefits. But I'd like staff to potentially consider whether there are some things within our policy framework that could go back to help lessen the impacts that we've asked and received from county employees. All of that's subject to a lot of bargaining, and so I don't want to be specific as to that, and I think staff needs to think through those things that might be appropriate if we choose to go in that direction. But I think it's exceptionally important that we look in that direction as we try to maintain the highest level of county services that we can under the situation that we find ourselves.
Certainly, without question, we're in as good a financial shape as we are because of our working collectively with our staff and being able to reduce our staff and the cost of staffing. With their cooperation, it certainly wouldn't have been as successful without them. And we were one of the leading counties in the state in terms of being able to address those issues. So I think as our financial situation changes and we are able to add back into the budget, we certainly do need to take a look at that. Supervisor Meacham.
Yeah, I'm very strongly supportive of what Mr. Seabock says in terms of one-time expenses. Mm-hmm. And also, in the suggestion here, we're putting $4 million into the pension debt obligation. So I think that's significant in terms of what we're doing for our employees as well. So I don't want to get into a situation where we're going to be committed for ongoing funds because this is a one-time opportunity and we probably won't see this again for some time. So I'll leave it at that.
Yes, and thank you for pointing that out, Supervisor Meacham. Absolutely, these are one-time monies. I do want to, though, emphasize that pension obligation bond is our debt, not the employee's debt. And so we need to keep that in mind. And I do support the recommendation that we start saving towards that date that we actually have to make a payment on that. So I am supportive of that. So seeing no other comments from my colleagues, do I have a motion?
Move staff recommendation.
Okay. Then moved and seconded staff's recommendation. Madam Clerk, second. Supervisor Meacham. Roll call, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Seebach. And now the next item, item number 16. Madam Clerk, would you please introduce that item?
Item number 16, a hearing to consider a resolution supporting an agricultural conservation easement on the Highland Ranch.
Okay. Ms. Carroll and Mr. Singlewald.
Right. Ellen Carroll, Environmental Coordinator, and Erlen will be making our presentation today. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Singlewald.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chairman Patterson and board members. I am Erlen Singwald with the Department of Planning and Building, and this item is a resolution in support of an agricultural conservation easement that would permanently preserve a 240-acre portion of the Highland Ranch. And I want to be really clear about what this is. This is a voluntary easement that the Land Conservancy would purchase from the landowners of the Highland Ranch, Don and Marilyn Warden. So the question then is, well, why is the county involved in this transaction? Well, the main funding source for this easement is a grant from the California Farmland Conservancy Program. And one requirement of that grant program is a resolution from the local agency in support of the conservation easement. So this resolution before you today would satisfy that requirement and would allow the transaction to be completed.
And that's it? Or you have more?
Yeah, I have a few more slides I want to run.
Okay, good.
I was going to say, we'll make them
yeah.
run through here. So the Highland Ranch, if you're not familiar with it, it's located on Los Osos Valley Road, about 2 miles west of San Luis Obispo. And this photograph actually comes from our general plan. It's the Highland Ranch, or the Warden Ranch, in 1901. The Highland Ranch has been a working cattle ranch and farm for 145 years, which makes it one of the few continuous operating ranches to remain in the same family for such a long time. So it's really an important part of the county's agricultural history. So this photograph, this image here, shows the two conservation easements. The resolution before you today really relates to this first easement here, which covers the main ranch headquarters and the farm, which is planted with about 170 acres of irrigated crops. The easement would restrict development on this in this area to the ranch headquarters, and also it would prohibit future subdivisions of this parcel. And so what does that mean? Well, based on a 40-acre minimum parcel size, the farm could actually be divided up into four or five new 40-acre parcels. These smaller parcels would be less viable for agriculture and therefore more likely to convert to non-ag uses. So the easement will allow that property, will allow the farm to remain intact for many years into the future. And then the second easement, it's not directly related to the resolution before you, but it would preserve the remainder of the ranch, and it's intended to, it recognizes the rangeland, open space, scenic resource, and watershed values of the more steeply sloping portion of the ranch. So earlier this month at a planning department hearing, a lot line adjustment was approved for the Warden Ranch, and this lot line adjustment helps to facilitate the conservation easement by placing all of the farmland in a single parcel. What it also does is it eliminates four parcels, antiquated parcels, that are located in environmentally sensitive areas. So that's another benefit of the lot line adjustment. And here are the newly created parcels. You can see the farmland and the ranch headquarters would all be located on this new parcel number one. Development, again, would be restricted to the ranch headquarters. And that's a staff presentation, and I'm available for questions. And also the Land Conservancy, Bob Hill from the Land Conservancy is here, as well as Mr. Warden.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Singewald. I do want to recognize Mr. Don Warden is here, and then the property owner, and then Bob Hill and Stacy Smith with the San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy. And I will open it to the public. I have no request to speak. Do we have any? So I'll close it to the public and then bring it back to the board.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion, obviously, in support of staff's recommendation here in just a second. I just want to comment that we're on the verge of an extraordinary result. Anyone who has driven Los Osos Valley Road between here and Los Osos has seen the Highland Ranch, has seen the Warden property. On the south side of the road there, it is some of the most extraordinarily rich farmland that we have in this county. And I can't say enough about the result that Mr. and Mrs. Warden have put in motion here to conserve this in perpetuity for both its agricultural and, again, outside the action that we're considering today, its rangeland and scenic and habitat values. They have chosen to work with an organization that I am exceptionally fond of. The Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County has accomplished its own set of extraordinary things. And to have this result in the land of this quality in such a high profile area, I think, is true testament to great work on all parties who have been involved in this. With that, I'm proud to recommend approval of the resolution put before us.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Point of discussion, I do want to raise one question. The action that we're taking today allows them to move forward with potential funding. Is that more or less guaranteed, or are there more steps to take?
That's a great question for Bob Hill with the Land Conservancy.
I'm just hopeful that this will get us to the end result. I was just curious.
Yes.
Would. Mr. Hill?
Good morning, Chairman Patterson and fellow members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm Bob Hill. I'm on the staff of the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo as its executive director. To answer your question, in short, the funds from the California Farmland Conservancy Program, a subset of the State Department of Conservation, are awarded and are indeed in contract at this particular point in time. We'll also enjoy grant funding through our relationship with Camp San Luis Obispo and the National Guard Bureau to match those state funds, to bring those federal sources there. Then also we have a generous grant funding facility from the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, and as well as a minor component funded through the local Harold J. Miosi Charitable Trust. While I have a moment of your time, I just thought I would point out that this is the first grant that's been awarded in San Luis Obispo County from the California Farmland Conservancy Program. So I'm particularly delighted to have their interest and support in our county. Out on the coast, they've been very active, for example, in the Pajaro Valley near Watsonville, but never in our area. So this is a nice opportunity to get some state attention. I think really their goal today is to ensure that what we're doing doesn't conflict with any local general plan policy or land use plans, and they want to make sure that there's local support for the transaction. The last thing I'd like to mention is to offer my nod of appreciation to Erlen Singewald and Bill Robeson. Your staff have been exceptionally professional, competent, timely, communicative, and we really appreciate their support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. And Mr. Warden, thank you. And
can I just say a word?
Absolutely.
I'm Don Warden, representing the Warden Family Trust, and my wife and I certainly appreciate all of the effort that the staff has gone through in helping to hopefully make this an accomplishment very shortly. And the land can.
And before we adjourn to closed session, I will open it to the public. I do have one request to speak on closed session, Julie Tacker. Ms. Tacker.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and the addenda to your closed session was a property negotiation for the site at the corner of Fern and Mitchell Drive in Cuesta by the Sea in Los Osos. It's related to the Los Osos Wastewater Project. I did send you some correspondence. I have some, I think, better ideas of where this powerhouse, standby power generator, can go. The particular property that you're maybe putting an option on today in your negotiation or your discussion has not gone through the CEQA process that the rest of the wastewater project did. I would ask that you send it back to Public Works to maybe further look at the sites that I'm recommending. These are already disturbed or already acquired by the wastewater project. There's a Golden State Water Company has a water yard within less than half a mile from the site. This is electricity, gentlemen. You can run a wire all around the town and have that impact of that generator house be away from that neighborhood. And I really think a further look at this project or this portion of the wastewater project is very doable. Actually, the LOCAC, the Los Osos Community Advisory Council, looked at this. There was a community input. My suggestion was raised, and Mr. Waddell did agree that it could be done, but he didn't commit, of course, and I would ask again that while you're discussing it today, maybe you ask Public Works for their input about an alternative site. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tacker, and with that, we'll adjourn to closed session and reconvene in open session at 1:30.
Live.
Okay, good. Thank you. Welcome back. And I'll ask the County Council to report out of closed session, please.
Yes,
Ms.
Chairman.
Neal?
Chairman Patterson, thank you. No reportable action was taken in closed session today.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And Madam Clerk, if you would introduce the next item, please.
We have presentation.
Okay, and we have two.
I'll move approval of the presentation calendar.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded that we approve the presentation calendar. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Sure.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes, ma'am.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Okay, and Mr. Gibson, if you would
thank you. I
do
have
us the honor of reading that first one.
Proclaiming rideshare, and I believe we have Angela from the San Luis Obispo County Rideshare. We are as
your carpool Mondays, Tuesday. Oh.
Oh.
Oh. There you go.
Test.
All right. Marty, give us a thumbs up.
Here we go.
Hold on. Mr. Bruce?
Okay. I'm feeling it now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have before me a resolution proclaiming October 2012 as Rideshare Month in San Luis Obispo County, and it to encourage people to use sustainable transportation. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim October 2012, as Rideshare Month in San Luis Obispo County. Angela?
Would you like to say a few words? Okay.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the Council. I appreciate being in front of you again for yet another campaign. As we know, fall is coming and October is right around the corner. Rideshare Month will be the entire month of October, and this is a campaign that we're particularly excited about because it is encouraging everyone to try something or continue doing something not alone. We all have to get to and from work, and so this is a way to encourage people to try and walk or bike or bus or carpool or vanpool to get there. And we have some incentives to help you out, and what's better than cash? Every Friday in October, there will be three people who win $100 cash that we will hand deliver to the winners. And it's very simple. All you have to do is either do what you're doing or try it out and log on rideshare.org your commute. And then that gives us everybody's contact information that we can pull from to find the winners. Now, a great question is why? Why does it matter so much how you get to and from work? And there's a lot of cars out on the road, and I think all of us would appreciate, while we're not LA and we don't have the traffic of these larger metropolitan areas, we don't want to either. And so trying to reduce congestion on the roads and put a little bit of that money back in our pockets, as we all are trying to find better, smarter fiscal ways to be able to make things meet here in the county. So we're encouraging people to try these other modes or continue doing them. And we have some things that are going on throughout the entire month to encourage people in the various modes. So every Monday in October is Carpool Monday. And the rideshare team will be out at different gas stations, and we'll post them just the morning of on Facebook. And if we catch you carpooling, we're going to give you $20 in gas and some coffee. And on Tuesdays, the transit operators in our county have decided that last year was so successful, they want to continue. Transit Tuesdays, everyone rides the bus throughout the county for free, any bus. And then we're going to have mystery thank you shoppers who will be thanking people for riding the bus, for being on there if we catch you on there. Vanpool Thursdays is continuing, and this year we're doing a showcase. Each Thursday from 11:30 to 1:30, we're going to have a different Vanpool showcased in different areas, and you can find that information on rideshare.org. And this gives people an opportunity to actually see the van, sit in the seat, see what it takes to be a driver, where there are seats available, how much it costs, and maybe on your lunch break with your friends, if you've got eight other friends that you're having lunch with anyway, and you guys figure out you go to and from the same place, you can set up a vanpool and save yourself some gas money. And then on Friday, of course, is Bike Fridays, and we could not break tradition. So, of course, we have bike breakfasts every Friday morning throughout the city of SLO. And again, you can find out information on our website, rideshare.org, to find out where those are. And that's free breakfast goodies, including coffee, at every one of those breakfasts on Friday morning. So thank you all so much for your time, and thank you for your support.
Great. Would you give that website one more time, please?
Certainly. Rideshare.org.
Okay. Very good.
Angela Nelson.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you much. Our next presentation this morning is recognizing our longtime employees, and I'll ask Tammy Douglas Schatz to lead that discussion. Ms. Schatz.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. Human Resources is so pleased to be here to help you recognize employees who have dedicated their careers to public service. And we have one recognition award today for 35 years of service. And so, David Mayfield, would you please come up to the podium?
Okay.
Resolution, yes.
Thank you. Yes. Welcome, Mr. Mayfield. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution commending David Mayfield in recognition of 35 years of service with San Luis Obispo County. Whereas David Mayfield has worked for the Department of Behavioral Health, Mental Health since June 6, 1977 as a mental health therapist in the Youth Services Division. He provides services in collaboration with multiple school districts, probation, the Department of Social Services, and contractors, and is currently the coordinator of the Youth Services Day Treatment Program. Dave relentlessly pursues excellence, commitment, and dedication to all his interests, from his work to his 39 years of marriage. David be and hereby is commended for his 35 years of dedication to the county mission. Be it also resolved that David is wished the best of health, happiness, and good fortune in his continued service and beyond.
Thank you.
There you are, sir. And we do need to get a picture.
Or too young for 35 years.
Hey, started at 24.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well said. David, we'd be honored to have a picture with you, if you will. Join us.
Well, he'd be honored to have it with us.
Yes. Well, we don't give him that choice. There we go. Is that going to work? Okay, thank you. And Dr. Baylor has a few comments.
Good afternoon. Karen Baylor, Behavioral Health Administrator. The department just wants to thank Dave for 35 years of committed service. He's a passionate, strong advocate for children and family members, and we just really want to thank you for all of your hard work. And I think Mental Health Children's Services will declare today as Dave Mayfield Day. So thank you very much.
Yay. All right. Thank you. Yeah. I just want to say thank you to Karen, Dr. Baylor, and Brad Sinceri, and Patty Ford, my immediate supervisor, for pulling together those great words and the sneaky little questions all week working up to that, and appreciate that. It really is an honor to stay so long. Patty and I were just talking about retirement and how you start in your job, how long are you thinking, and I know I wasn't thinking when I started how long would I stay. I was just super excited coming straight out of grad school to start in such a great position, because 35 years ago services were just really getting started, and to be able to have this term, I mean, Brad's actually been here much longer than I have, and we've watched children's services expand and change and go through lots of growing pains, but overall, San Luis County continues to lead the state in innovation and commitment, and it's super to be a part of a team that has lasted so long. Many of us in our youth services team have been here for at least 25 years and more, so looking forward to, we'll see if I go to 40. but every day is a miracle in youth services, and it's a joy to come to work. So thank you very much for your support of mental health services, and definitely giving a plug for this year's suicide forum that's coming up in October.
Well, I just want to say, David, that the work that you and your colleagues do with youth is invaluable, and it certainly makes life better, not only for the youth, but for the adults that they have relationships with. And it's just critical work, and thank you for your dedication to that work.
You're very welcome. It's a blessing and a calling, and wouldn't want to do anything else. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Thank you, Ms. Douglas-Schatz. We have the final item of the day, and if the clerk would introduce that item, please, Madam Clerk.
Item number 21, a request to approve a memorandum of understanding between Avila Beach Sea Life Center, Avila Beach Community Services District, and San Luis Obispo County Parks to transfer park lands for the expansion of the Avila Beach Sea Life Center.
Okay. Mr. Black.
Good afternoon, Chair Patterson, members of the Board of Supervisors. I am Curtis Black, your Deputy Director for Parks. And today I'd like to briefly review a memorandum of understanding that could make possible an expansion of the Avila Beach Sea Life Center. With us today in the chambers are the Executive Director of the Center, Ms. Priscilla Kiesig, and General Manager for the District, John Wallace. Oh, there we go. As background, the current center is approximately 4,000 square foot building on a 4,850 square foot parcel. This parcel was once part of the adjacent Avila Community Park. In 2002, the county transferred that parcel to the Avila Beach Community Service District to allow it to be owned by a public agency and to be leased to the center for the purpose of constructing and operating the now existing community building there, the Sea Life Center. Since that date, the center constructed the two-story building and provided thousands of hours of recreation and education for residents, school classes, tourists, and visitors. This is attachment A to your report buffer for the future. Because this existing landscape was formerly hedge pruned, future park maintenance costs would be decreased nominally, as we would no longer have to perform that maintenance. On-street parking, which is always of concern in the town of Avila, will have to be addressed during the planning and design aspects of the future project. Programming periods and focus on which activities there will be very important. This MOU contains commitments for each party. The center will pay all the costs for transferring the parcel. They will secure all necessary permits, defend and hold harmless both the district and the county, provide for all maintenance and operating and ongoing costs, and they would provide all of the recreation and educational costs at no cost to the county or the district. The district is committed to considering the land transfer and providing a $1 per year lease for the center should this project be completed. And the county will allow access to the parcel and consider land transfer to the district at no cost. Following discussion among the parties, the Board of Directors for the Avila Beach Sea Life Center approved this attached MOU on May 25, 2012. The Avila Beach Community Service District Board of Directors approved the MOU on June 12, 2012, and your County Parks and Recreation Commission recommended that the Board approve this MOU on June 28, 2012. Should the board approve this MOU, our next steps would include following those steps outlined in the MOU to consider transferring the lands, returning to both the center and the district boards for their approvals. We would again gain a recommendation from your Parks and Rec Commission and then return to your board for any transfer of land that might occur. Our recommended action is to approve this MOU with Avila Beach Sea Life Center and Avila Beach Community Service District for the expansion of Avila Beach Sea Life Center. And this concludes my presentation. We're available for any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Black. Any questions from members of the board? I see none. I do have a couple of requests to speak from members here, and so I'll open it to public comment and please come forward as I call your name, Priscilla Kiesig, as well as Rob Moley.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the board, for allowing us to come before you today. I'm very excited to be here in support of this project. I am very proud of what our center has been able to do in the last couple of years. Our board and staff has worked very, very hard to be able to offer things to the students of this community and now also to the general public. To give you an idea of the types of programs that we've been able to do and want to continue doing in the future, I want to let you know that this year we've served over 10,000 public visitors, over 2,500 students, allocated over $12,000 in scholarships. We've developed a pre-K program and summer camps that went all the way from kindergarten through teenage years. We've had a lecture series, a movie night, participated in an Earth Day cleanup, and developed a partnership with Surf Rider to offer water testing to the general public. The whales that came to the bay this summer just recently were really exciting for us because it was finally a showcase of what we already know is there and what we're trying to get the message out to everybody. And so when the public comes through, we're able to show them that Avila Beach is not just a pretty place with palm trees, but there's an amazing, abundant marine life right under the bay that they don't even know is there. We think that this project really represents all the best things of our community, the dedication to education, to partnering with university like Cal Poly in mentorship, community getting together in volunteerism, and welcoming green tourism to the county. So I can't think of a better project to put in Avila, of course, and I hope you feel the same way. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Rob Mullay, followed by Jeff Priolo.
Good afternoon. My name is Rob Mole. I live in Avila Beach. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to say a few words here this afternoon. I've resided in San Luis Obispo County for over 35 years and have raised four boys who I'm happy to say are now grown men. I retired about a year and a half ago from a long career as an engineering geologist here in San Luis Obispo and have been fortunate enough to become involved with the Sea Life Center as a board member since then. I am grateful for the opportunity the Sea Life Center has offered to me to give back to our community. As a board member, I have been able to observe and participate in the various...
Graduate of Cal Poly's Biological Sciences Department many years ago, and a board member. I guess the point that I'd like to add is that the research and the homework that's being done by Priscilla, our executive director, and other board members is exhaustive, and I'm sure will produce great results in terms of the design and the structure and the purpose of the facility. They've been traveling throughout California to see other facilities, Monterey Bay Aquarium and many others, and talking with experts, and I'm sure that, again, a great result will come about. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Priolo. John Wallace.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Board. John Wallace with Avila Beach Community Services District. I just wanted to come today to reaffirm my board's support for this MOU. They did consider it as was presented by Mr. Black back in June, and they did unanimously approve the MOU. And it's been a pleasure to see the Sea Life Center and the Marine Institute before that grow into a mature organization with a lot of good programs and a lot of support to the community. And the district as a whole and the board and myself all appreciate what they've done. Be happy to answer any questions, but I did want to reaffirm to you that our board of directors does support the MOU 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. That was my last request to speak in public comment, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Supervisor Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a happy item to be able to have before us, and I just wanted to quickly compliment Priscilla and her staff, and she's got a really good board. They're doing great things out there, and because it's become so popular, especially with kids, you know, she's been talking about it for a while now, about expansion, and I want to thank Curtis and the Avila CSD for being such good partners in moving this ahead. You know, it's one of those resources in our community that is growing, and I think more people will have an opportunity to make use of it as they get to expand. So, with that, I would love to make the motion to approve this MOU with the Sea Life Center and the CSD and County Parks for this expansion.
Second that for the comment.
Okay. Right. It's moved and seconded that we. Approve the MOU, Supervisor Meacham.
Yes, and I think one of the most visionary, brilliant, and nice people I've ever met was Russ Kiesig. What a great guy. And his vision is now coming to fruition with what you're doing, Priscilla. And he would be very proud, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. He was a great friend and just a wonderful man to know.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson.
And I would only say, Mr. Chairman, that all you need to know about the Sea Life Center, you can find out by going in there in one weekday when there's a class or two or more of kids in there, and listen to the energy and the excitement in there. It is truly inspiring, and I wish them the very best and hope this leads to some really great things.
Yeah. And I'm sure it will. So with that, roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for coming this afternoon. With that, we will adjourn this afternoon's meeting and reconvene at 9 o'clock. Next Tuesday.
Next week.